All right, welcome everybody. Welcome to episode three, as opposed to episode two. Now you can see us in 1080p, all
Hey.
thanks to the free trial that StreamYard kind of made us enroll for. But we're taking a look at the positives from here. The duck's gone, so now we have our cool logo up there, and we're just gonna go crazy with this as long as we have the free trial, right, Sean?
Right. Production value is increasing with every episode, right?
I
Yeah.
like
What's
that.
going to happen, I think, in the not too distant futures, because StreamYard's kind of expensive, is we may have to go back to WebEx at some
Yeah.
point, right?
I don't
So
know. We
don't
got to
get your
fight the
hopes up.
system. Yeah, we got to fight the system, Sean. This,
That's
well,
right.
here's keeping everybody at the edge of their seats to try to figure out what we're going to do in the next episode.
That's right. Hey, this is we're a punk podcast, right?
Absolutely, from our band room, like our
That's
music
right.
room, right? All right, so coming to episode three, and this is something that's well within your area. We named this like, "Do Androids Dream of Academic Integrity, Ethics, Equity, and AI?" Right? So
Right.
that's
And
what we're
hopefully
going
people
at.
are paying attention because these are all sort of riffs on sci-fi themes, right? So this is how we keep ourselves entertained. We come up with cheesy puns as titles for podcasts.
Agreed. And that's always super fun. So to theme out this episode, this will more be on the use of AI in education that ideally demands more policy. It requires intentional ethical designs that reflects like shared values across students, faculty, staff, and administration, right? Well, I don't think we've said it enough, but this is not just for students and faculty. This is for staff and admin, right, Sean?
Right. It's shared practice and cultural commitment. And the university is going to have to for us to work this, and particularly if we want to reach out into the community or even K through 12
Absolutely.
and kind of be touchstones for this, we have to develop the shared practice and the cultural commitment at the same time. So that's ultimately what we're going to talk about.
Absolutely. And I'm glad that you brought in the thing about the community as well, because at the end of the day, I think we would also that would be a big outreach for us as well. We want this to be like a North Star for everybody in the River Valley community and beyond, right? We don't want to restrict ourselves to anything. Well, that brings us to the first part of this episode, which is the seven ethical domains of concern, right?
Yep, and there are seven, and this is based on, since we do book sort of ads, AI and the Future of Education by Shaw, AI for Educators, Matt Miller, AI Ethics, which is a textbook by Boddington, Teaching with AI, which seems to be a touchstone for us, and then everything we pulled out of the conference in Florida. So they had sessions on ethics, et cetera. And I think one place to begin, and we mentioned it in the last podcast, and we keep talking about this North Star. We have to get real clear on where AI touches and where it will never touch. Some things always have to be human. So we don't want to make everything AI. And that was actually based on a recommendation from IBM at that conference. And it's something I think that stuck with both of us, wouldn't you say? That, yeah, AI is great, but it can't do everything and it shouldn't do everything.
Agreed. Yeah,
So.
and I'm with you on that one 100%. And with IBM as well. And I thank them for asking the question, because sometimes we get a little deluded in thinking that AI is going to be everywhere. Like, AI is
Right.
everywhere. But yeah, is it though?
Yeah, well, it shouldn't be. I mean, and that brings up ethics then. We have to develop rules, but we need to be aware that ethics isn't just about rules. It's about deciding in advance what parts of the educational experience remain human-led and where AI might augment work. And so that's the North Star model. And so to do this responsibly, we have to understand the areas that are touched by these ethical concerns. So, for instance, when you look at the ethical concerns, this is mostly coming out of that Boddington ethics book. There's bias and discrimination because AI is going to replicate social inequities. And unless it's actively audited and supervised, you're going to get all these weird cases. And that's why we dwell on academic misconduct shouldn't be the only thing about AI because studies, for instance, indicate, and we've talked about this, that the AI checkers will flag students on the autistic spectrum. or particularly in students that speak English as a second language, because they actually speak and write English better than those of us who grew up, particularly learning English in the South, right? I mean, that's a whole different kind of English. So, you know, you can't automatically just create these gatekeeping rules that say, hey, you violated AI, you go, you know, you go to jail. That's not how it works. At the same time, the biases and that revolve around, for example, what was it? I think it's, isn't it Copilot now, but it had a different name and it was released on Twitter and became horribly racist.
I forget the name of it. Yeah,
but,
that's true.
But it was a Microsoft product, and I think it eventually becomes Copilot. I assume they fixed that. But it was released on Twitter, and within like 72 hours, it joined the Nazi party. And so these things are going to reflect back our biases and create patterns.
It was called Tay. I'm sorry.
Tay. So that it's going to reflect back our biases and discriminatory patterns as well. We have to pay attention to the fact that if we're even going to use AI, different tiers of paid service within AI are going to get through checkers and they're going to do different things. So the students who can't afford AI at the higher level are going to get trapped into the ethical consequences or the dilemmas for the rules we create.
Yeah.
Another one is privacy and surveillance. And this is more on the staff and administrative side, and that is who has access to the data. So if you write for instance, load in, and faculty would be affected by this as well. If you load in your student papers or student grades into an AI, by default, it becomes part of the LLM. So the AI systems, whenever you adopt them, they need to be FERPA and HIPAA compliant. You need to verify that. Even Turnitin, we were talking about Turnitin.
Yeah, I was about to bring it up.
Well, we're going to bring it up later. But if you don't click two boxes and then somewhere over in the temple of computers in the library, if they don't click a box, then everything you load in goes into the LLM as well. I mean, am I wrong about
that? Which is crazy. Yeah, right. And it blew my mind when we heard like the lady over there say that. And we were like, wow, okay. So,
are you sure you want to do that?
We did not know that.
So that you know, another ethical consideration is autonomy and human oversight. So in essence, automation without human oversight is dangerous. It is inherently dangerous. That's what leads to the proliferation of the false narratives. The hallucinations become treated as real. You know, AI might even, if it's used in advising, suggest a student drop a course without input from the teacher. It has all, they used it in predicting recidivism rates for prisoners considered for parole. And it turns out that it, in playing the odds, that it became discriminatory in that respect. And so you always have to have human oversight. It has to be also transparent and explainable. You need to help students understand exactly how and why AI made that decision. So on the student side, and students are evidently got kind of watching some of these podcasts too. So we're going to get to a section that's directed specifically to you, but you as students in particular need to be transparent in your use so you don't get caught up in all this. If you don't know what the rule is, ask your professor. Always ask, because they may say, oh, it's okay if you use it for this and not for that. Right now, we don't have specific policies, so it's kind of the Wild West. So always ask. Equity and access, we have to make sure it's available to everybody. That's maybe a problem for us. In addition, there's a process of dehumanization, meaning the student submits something written by AI, and then the faculty member loads it into AI to be graded. And before long, you have the AI talking to itself through the grading process. And we actually heard an example of that in business and industry, where one of the businesses, they were speaking to the corporate execs, and they were talking about how the worker evaluations, any evaluations, had improved dramatically at this organization. And it was because they were doing certain things, and they went and asked the managers and the employees, well, why are these better? And they said, well, we're using AI to write them. And then they went back to the execs and they said, well, we've been able to offer better feedback on the evaluations. And they said, well, what are you doing? They said, well, we're using AI to take in all those evaluations and write reports back to the managers. So that's AI true. Was effectively running the corporation at that point.
Absolutely. Right? Was. So, and there was another funny line that somebody had said over there. It was more like, you know, assessments are more like you writing a document which says, I did good. And somebody else grading that, you said, he did good, or he or she did good.
So you can't dehumanize. It's always got to be mentorship and feedback. We talked about that last time. Mm-hmm. You need responsibility and accountability. So that's really where the policy comes in. Mm-hmm. We're going to say, these are the rules. This is who is accountable. Right. Because that would be part of the rules. And so what we then have to do is, and this is what we're doing through the policy group, is we're saying, all right, if these are the areas that are touched, what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to start setting these boundaries and figure out where these lines are. Mm-hmm. That's why we want to talk to every department. And if you're in those meetings, you'll recognize that we're asking you questions about where's the line.
Right.
That's really what we're trying to do, because we don't want to create this blanket policy that doesn't have adaptability and flexibility, first to the changes in the technology, and then next to specific departmental concerns and requests. So we want flexibility, particularly on the ground. So one of the things we may recommend in a policy is that as long as you take all these characteristics into account, even at the departmental level, just tell your faculty to write an AI policy that's very clear, so that if we have to deal with it on the back end, we can say, well, what are the criteria? Well, it's right here. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely does. And like, you know, like you said, like it's the Wild West at this point and nobody knows what's going on. So I think like, you know, trying to structure and kind of policy things, even if it's for, you know, your department level, I think that'd be a start than anything else, right?
Right.
And then that's going to give us all of these, that's going to hit all of these points. And I think it's going to start making sense.
Well, I think so. And I think part of our effort through the task force will be creating a website where we can even put some definitions of these principles up.
Absolutely. Like
the 7 criteria, and just say, these are the things you have to think about. And these are examples of when it could go wrong.
Right.
And in terms of, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. And just kind of like interjecting a few questions and acting like the audience over here. Cause again, you're the person behind this. I'm just here, you know, just listening to you and all, right?
So, I may be like AI, maybe getting it all wrong.
Just a question of a few quick things. So, I remember in Florida, they kind of talked about having their own GPT system.
Yeah.
And I, from the technological standpoint of thing, I believe that stuck GPT system. So, you know, one that's just within the campus.
Right. I think they use the word closed.
Closed GPT system. Thank you so much. I would have never found that word. Yes.
Yeah, no, it didn't make sense to me until they described it, but go ahead.
Right. So having a closed GPT system would be a better way out. Like, what do you think about it? And what do you think, like, how do you think as we should tackle that as a university?
Well, I think that would be very, very important. My understanding from the session I went to, because Florida talked about creating their own, and they've got a massive one. That's why we went to Florida, and that's why all these Yale and all these other universities show up at Florida. It's because Florida really is on the bleeding edge of this. For the record, we were asked this question in a meeting with departments. They were saying, well, where is most everybody else? And honestly, the answer is they're where we are, right? So, you know, Florida is just the sort of the exemplar of what's happening on the bleeding edge, Florida, Harvard, and places like that, and MIT. But if we go back to the closed system, it does several things. For instance, it deals with all the ethical issues in terms of FERPA and HIPAA, because by default, the LLM is internal and it's proprietary. Right. So you don't have to worry about external sort of data privacy issues, except for the usual ones, which is people coming into the system. You also, at the same time, you kind of create opportunities to create systems that do handle advising, but you still need the human oversight. For instance, you could create a system, and I think they do this at Georgia, where the student says, this is what I want to major in, and then the AI pieces together from the curriculum exactly the kind of classes you need. It's kind of like our course maps.
Yeah.
But it can tailor it to very, very specific kinds of wants and desires. So a student may want to major in pre-med, but at the same time end up in psychiatry. Well, what it would do is it would then say, all right, well, these are the pre-med options, you have to do this. But if you want psychiatry, you're probably going to need to do this, this, and this in psych, right, et cetera. And so it can kind of tailor it. Mm. Others use the closed systems for things like raising money through foundation. Mm. Now, they don't necessarily send out emails through the AI system, but they will create AI avatars to kind of give updates and talk about what's going on and create the videos. And so I think what it does is it solves a lot of different problems in terms of ethics, because you don't have to worry about the spread everywhere else. Mm-hmm. You can contain it and then set your rules to the contained system. Right. And Florida actually indicate you could do this for a couple hundred thousand dollars. Because I think, and you're the tech guy, but they were saying you really only needed a couple of GPUs and then some infrastructure to create an enclosed GPT. And on the research side, that opens up the opportunity for everybody to use a closed system at tech to engage in their own research. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't get out on the web. It doesn't become part of the LLM at ChatGPT, et cetera. So, they encourage that at Florida in particular across all the disciplines. So you have English profs using it. You have art professors using it. And what you do is it goes back to that old gatekeeper system where you have to request time and then you get a certain amount of time with certain token limits, et cetera. And then once you blow that out, then you're stuck and you have to go back into the queue. So, but anyway, I don't know. You're the tech guy. Would that something like that, could it work here?
Yeah, I would be all for it. I think it's going to work very well over here or anywhere else, like considering how prevalently it's being used, not just by faculty, but students, staff, admin, everybody's using it at this point. So, right. I mean, I don't see how this is not going to benefit us in any way, shape or form. That being said, I am also all in for getting our own facilities over here. So I think we were talking about it, and we're thinking about developing like an AI track in our computer science bachelor's program. And we've kind of requested, or like it was my idea that, or at least like, you know, our committee's idea that we should start a AI lab over here, which like, you know, we have a networking lab, we have a cybersecurity lab, but we still don't have a dedicated AI lab. So, you know, we would like to upgrade all of those computers and, you know, make that specifically for AI so that people can train their stuff and not have to like pay online services for it. And you know, you can containerize everything, you can contain everything, and everything is done in-house. And I think, like, you know, it's very good start, because research is being done in AI over here. There are a lot of people like working with under AI research, but we really don't have the facilities right now to work with it. And shout out to University of Arkansas up there, because we did have a talk with them to allow us to use their facilities. So they have they have like tons of GPU that the state's given them, and they can share it with everybody in the state. So they've been kind enough to tell us that, you know, we can share their stuff and you know, we can use it as needed. So it would be great to have something in here, but until then we're kind of leveraging off of other facilities.
Independent of the facility side, I think dragging it back to ethics, you know, once again, it does solve some of the ethical problems, but at the same time, it makes us sort of a hub for the region in terms of how you use AI more broadly in the community, because we know people are using it in the community as well. Right. It could be a K-12 sort of opportunity to teach them ethical use. Could be an opportunity to create multiple different kinds of classes as they change gen ed. It may be that this needs to be built into a separate kind of gen ed class. In general, then what you do on the ethical side is you have to, like I mentioned, you have to build that cultural practice in.
Yeah.
And universities can, if they tie into the community, be that beacon of cultural practice. Absolutely. This is how you use AI. Absolutely. You know what? We can even come and show you. Why don't you bring your class in?
Exactly.
And we'll show you our AI, and we'll show you how we use it, and we'll show you the dangers of using ChatGPT or DeepSeek or some of these others, particularly DeepSeek.
Yeah.
But yeah, don't use DeepSeek, kids.
No.
Don't use drugs and don't use DeepSeek. But In general, it provides a really important opportunity to shift the culture of the River Valley as well, I think. Absolutely. And move more toward ethical use. Mm-hmm. Because right now, it's not just about the university. It's about K through 12. It's about the students in both spaces. Mm-hmm. And it's about the community. Because I think the Wild West sort of feature of it is what creates the fear and concern. And in many respects, it may even drive some of the unethical use out of just a lack of awareness because nobody's talking about it.
Agreed.
Nobody's saying this is how you use it.
Agreed. So, and that's where, like, if we have like an AI center of whatever you want to call it, center of excellence, or like, you know, a space, a safe space where somebody who's scared about AI can come in and, you know, speak their hearts out and say, you know, I'm really worried about AI. Or if somebody's super enthusiastic about it, they can come in and, you know, they can show us how they're using AI. So, you know, we can hold on to that, like, you know, that ethical standard of being like, you know, this is probably like you should rethink the way that you're going forward. Or you can also, like, you know, it can help to relieve the stigma that's around AI as well. Like, right. there is social stigma. And I believe that, you know, once we kind of drag back to the ethical aspect of AI, that stigma is slowly going to go away as well.
Right. And, it, you know, all the while teaching people that bias and discrimination, privacy, autonomy, transparency, equity, dehumanization, responsibility, accountability. You know, here's one way to encapsulate it, because I think we need to talk to students at some point about this.
Yes.
Is that ultimately, if you change the culture in a particular way and you act as that beacon, you can actually ameliorate some of these other problems that we see as well, because we have to become more reflexive about this just in our daily lives as well. And I'm not trying to be pie in the sky. We just know that's how social change more broadly occurs. Mm-hmm. And I would add also, people tend to think that we have to rely solely on the computer science people to do this. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I think that's a horrible mistake. Not to pick on the computer science people, but what you need is you need the humanities, you need the behavioral scientists, and you need those people to lead on the ethical side. Absolutely. And that's why if you're paying attention to the podcast, sometimes I'm the guy who says, wait, let's slow down, even though I seem like a cheerleader sometimes. That's what you need. The Jiminy Cricket, the consciousness,
right?
That, or the conscience, rather, that kind of whispers in the ear of the computer science people, say, are you sure you want to do that?
Yeah. And again, it's like everybody coming together on this. That's right. Important, right? And again, I know computer science people get really excited about things. And, you know, we think that let's not stop anywhere. Let's just keep going. And, you know. Right. Go for it.
No, I was going to say, what's that quote from Jurassic Park? You spent so much time figuring out that you could do something, you never stopped to ask the question, should you do it?
Right. Yes, that's the question, right? And it's just like, you know, that new toy that you kind of want to play with and you want to keep playing with it until, you know, you find the next toy to play with.
That's right.
Well, that kind of leads us, because again, like, you know, we did talk to the students and we believe that the students are central in the whole role over here. So what are some of the ethical implications you'd say there are for the students over here?
Well, I think for the students, and this is specifically to any student who might be using and doesn't know what they're supposed to do, I would say stay tuned, because that's the culture change. It's going to be a little bit slower. But I would rely pretty heavily on your professor and just ask your professor, what is the appropriate use here? One of the things we found from the survey is that, for instance, use of it for brainstorming or process-oriented things, they didn't see that as inherently harmful. It was really more end product focused. Mm-hmm. So you may want to also talk to your professors about whether or not you can use a notebook, because you can create your own notebook LM by loading in all your notes and, you know, materials that you have related to the class, and then just ask it questions. Mm-hmm. So even if your professor isn't doing it, you still have the flexibility to do it. So I would say, you know, in terms of the students, beyond those seven broad principles, what we need to do in terms of student use is you need to think in terms of honesty. What is, if there is a rule, then what is the rule? If you don't know what the rule is, then be honest about it, to disclose it. Because I don't think anybody's really looking to you know, put you in the penitentiary over this or to kick you into academic misconduct. It's really more about, are you following rules of academic honesty? Are you essentially engaging in something shady? Did you use ChatGPT to write an essay and then you're trying to pretend you wrote it?
Yeah.
You know, here's the thing. And I tell my kid this when he does something stupid, which he does. I say, look, just be honest. Just tell me what we're dealing with so that we can figure out what the fair consequence is. Mm-hmm. If you lie, then the consequence gets worse. It's like with Nixon. I don't know if you remember. It's not the crime. It's the cover up that always gets
right,
you.
Right.
Yeah, so don't cover it up. Just be honest and ask when you don't know. Another thing I would warn students about very, very clearly, and I have this concern more generally about students, is they don't seem to be aware of the concern over privacy. This is true over social media, but it's also particularly true with AI. You are sharing whatever you're doing with part of a larger system, and it becomes part of the larger system. And yeah, you may think, well, I'm a needle in a haystack and then they'll never pick me out. But here's the danger of AI. You can have a million haystacks and ask one specific, very targeted question, and it will find you in less than a second. That's what AI does. AI sorts through patterns and data, and it will narrow down. I mean, am I crazy in thinking that? Let's say they loaded in all the information from everything, and then they threw it in a big sort of model, and then you said, hey, find Sean Huss in this. It would take less than a second for them to find me and everything about me.
Absolutely.
Just doing it.
It can even create a digital twin for you.
Right.
And that's the thing. So it can say that Sean has asked these questions. So which means, so it can do deductions on you and, you know, it can make a whole profile on you, and it's crazy.
Rapidly.
But, you know, that's how good it is. Yeah. Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. Rapidly.
Within a few seconds. Yeah.
I mean, so in essence, that's one of the dangers is, the more you share with AI about yourself, the more likely it is that this could happen. The digital twin stuff actually terrifies me a little bit. I didn't know you were going to go there, but
yeah.
But let's be honest about digital twins. They can mimic you, right?
Yeah.
They can, if they get
everything.
They're better with more data. So if they scrub social media, they look at how you wrote before, they do all those things. They can write like you, they can mimic you. And if they have enough imagery of you, they can even create an avatar that's you and talk like you. So
absolutely,
don't share with the AI.
That's
you know, stay away from. another one is. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. No. So I was just kind of going to ask you about like where faculty responsibility and leadership responsibility falls over here. But if you want to add something to that point, we can come to this after that.
Well, I was just going to say students also need to think about equity, humanity, and also adapt as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that these are sort of guiding principles. We don't want to punish students, but at the same time, we want to make sure that students don't create the conditions under which we have to punish them. And that's why you have to be honest.
Right. And I don't know if students completely grasp the whole thing about bias and in AI, but it's so prevalent. You know, when I see it, I was in a webinar the other day and there's this person of color over there, and he was saying that, you know, you can literally ask ChatGPT or any kind of AI to answer any question as a Black person, for example, right? And it's going to do that, but you know what it's going to do? It's going to overfit itself just because it doesn't have enough data. It's going to pretend to add in extra fluff, and it's going to overfit something.
It'll stereotype essentially,
it'll
right?
stereotype it like crazy, even for an Indian person or like, you know, any other person who is of color or has a different accent or has a different way of speaking. It's going to stereotype itself like extremely crazily, where you'll be like, wait, that can't be it. That's stupid. But that's just where we are. And I just want that to be said so that, you know, if students are hearing, you know that this is a thing. And it's pretty rampant. It's out there.
Right. Yeah.
All right. So coming back to my next question was, where do you think the faculty responsibility falls in over here?
Well, I think the faculty need to be aware that they can't just be enforcers of academic integrity.
Mm-hmm.
They have to be ethical leaders. They have to also practice what they preach, and they have to be transparent, and they have to be human, and they have to do all those things as well. So the list that I kind of ran through, honesty, privacy, equity, humanity, adaptation, these are all sort of faculty directed as well. Mm-hmm. And in particular, I think where the faculty really take the leadership role is by being very clear with AI policies. Like, nobody's going to tell you to use AI or not use AI, but mm-hmm. whatever you do, you have to be very clear on what that policy is. Mm-hmm. At the same time, you have to be transparent. So if you use, for instance, AI to create a rubric, I think you need to say, all right, well, I worked with AI based on our class notes to create this rubric, and then I changed these things because AI was dumb. So this is going to be the rubric because I think it does the thing that we need to do. And then what that does is it tells the students, you didn't just use AI. What you did was you used AI to generate something which you in turn edited and tailored specifically for use in the class. And that's how they're going to learn to do it. Mm-hmm. If you use AI, you also need to be very aware of literacy, and you need to maybe build that into your syllabus and talk about that in class as well. Mm-hmm. We had mentioned maybe doing classes and trying to share literacy. I know the library is going to be on the forefront of this because they're actually trained to do this. This right. is the thing they do in terms mm-hmm. of literacy, information literacy. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you need to be critical of it, but talk about what role it plays in anything that you generate. So if an AI generates a discussion prompt for you, then one thing you could do is you could say, all right, this is what AI came up with. What do we think? Should we change this? And then get the class involved. Let them look mm-hmm. for the issues with it. And then by doing that, what you do is you engage them at the same time. They get to answer their own questions. Mm-hmm. And I will tell you, I don't use AI, but in class as a review, because everybody wants a review day. Mm-hmm. One of the things I'll do in class in my more advanced theory classes, which are tougher and we have to get into weird concepts, I will quite frequently as a review not give them a sheet with a list of terms.
Yeah.
Because I found that not to work. I'll say, all right, what do you want me to ask you on this test? Hmm. And they will brainstorm and then we'll write it on the board and we'll come up with topics. We don't come up with the specific questions, to ask about on the test. And then I'll go through and I'll say, all right, I'm editor. I have editorial control. So I might change this, that, and the other.
Yeah.
But this is fine for topics. And I make mm-hmm. sure, you know, they have some choice, but it's sometimes the illusion of choice. I make sure it's whatever I want it to be on the test.
Want to say that out loud.
Right. Well, they're going to see that anyway, if they watch this. But I think they kind of know. But here's the funny thing. When you do that, they actually come up with some really tough, very fair questions.
Hmm.
Questions that are not that different than I would have asked.
Yeah.
And in terms of performance, their performance does improve, but people who didn't show up to class and didn't study still flunk as well.
Right.
So it in the end, it kind of works itself out and the people get, you know, your grade will reflect your level of engagement and study and all that stuff as well. I think AI could do that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's essentially, that's what I think. I mean, what do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. And see, this is why I appreciate like these conversations that we have like across departments, because there are so many ways that people are like so many kind of tricks and things that people are using that would be so much more helpful in other departments as well. But just, you know, people need to know that, and which kind of leads me to the other topic as well. Like, you know, people who are shying away from AI, like if you bring me your non-AI class, I can show you the ways in which you can like, you know, spruce up your class a little. Maybe you don't have to use everything that I say. You can use this one topic that I think would be really cool if you kind of incorporated that in your class. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's the thing. Like, you know, I bring this up because you brought up that point of like, you know, giving students the options to choose what questions they want to answer, right? I don't think any AI system would have prompted me that solution if I would have asked them that. And see, that's where, like, you know, this humanity aspect of everything is so difficult to bring out, or like, you know, it's so difficult to make it go away.
Mm-hmm.
And and that's something that I really appreciate. But yeah, that's a cool suggestion. And, you know, if everybody, more people are listening, like, you know, you can give it a try and let us know what you think about it.
Copyright.
Okay, all right. That too.
No, use it.
So, and in this conversation, we're kind of going from ground to higher levels, and we've talked mm-hmm. about, you know, just ethics, where students are, where faculty is, and Now let's take it up to the next level. So where do you think, or how do you think administrators and the system level ethics plays a role in all of this?
Well, I think that's another important feature, and that's something that, we tend to, when we think about policy and we hear from the faculty, it's all about controlling academic misconduct. And that's why I keep saying no, that's only part of it. It's a very small part, but it's important nonetheless. But I think bigger issues are things like at the institutional level, and this is true for staff. We need to define it as faculty, staff, and administrators. What is it going to enhance and what's it going to replace? That's that North Star sort of question. But what we see from the administrators and what we need is clarity in the institutional practices. So we need institutional clarity, and at the same time, no policy should ever suppress local academic freedom, meaning very simply, that's going to be the tension that plays out. So that's why I say at the individual faculty level, one way to solve this is you just have an AI policy. It could be don't use it. It could be these are the ways you can use it, and then you have to disclose to me and be transparent. But no matter what, at the institutional and the administrative level, we need clarity and leadership on that. And our task force plays an important role in that. But at the same time, we don't make all these decisions. These decisions are higher up as well. I think one thing that is recommended is AI literacy should be universal. Even if you choose not to use it, you need to know what it is and know how it
Agreed.
works.
Agreed.
And then if you don't choose to use it, you still should at the same time model what appropriate use is, in the same way that we do with plagiarism, et cetera. It's just this is what we need to do. So that at the institutional level or at the administrative level means that they're going to have to follow it too. So you
Agreed.
can't, for instance, take all the student data and load it into a chat GPT to do an analysis. You can't use it to data mine to find one particular case. You can't use it to do assessments to figure out which programs to close or which faculty to lay off. Those are going to be human-based qualitative decisions that are driven by policy. At the same time, we need to train faculty. So we not only need it to be universal, ethically, then that requires us to train faculty for opportunities for integration. And then think of ways to redesign assessment and at the administrative level, then we're going to have to uphold that rigor. There have to be rigorous standards that are put in place and then promote best practices and transparency. So once again, on the policy side, if we're using these sort of broader principles as a way to think about administrative input, or it's really more that the administration supports these initiatives, like you had mentioned, creating the AI center. All of those would come out of an AI center. It's not just, hey, look, we've got this fancy machine and we're going to tweak some code. It's really the AI center is going to do all these things. And so what you need at the core is administrative support. It's going to have to be financial. It's going to have to be bureaucratic. It's going to have to be all those things as well. Does that make sense?
It's going to have to be a movement, basically,
No.
in the direction. And so you talked about digital literacy, and how important do you think digital literacy or AI literacy and having an overall ethical campus would be? Are we moving towards it? What are the steps that you think we need to move towards it? And just a short explanation of it, maybe.
Yeah, because I'm long-winded. I get
No, you're
it.
fine. This is interesting, and this is the conversation that we needed to have, and
Well,
I'm
and we're
glad that
going to
we
have
have it.
other parts of it later, right? So,
Absolutely.
particularly on the academic misconduct side. But, I think in general, if we're talking about a more literate and ethical campus, I think they need to become ethics need to become a regular part of the academic life. And that's going to be tied into writing skills, citation practices, which we already do, but then we're going to have to build in AI. And I think one strategy is libraries. I know there is sometimes a move in academia to say, well, you don't need a library anymore. Everything's online. And, kids buy their own books anyway. And that I think that is a serious disservice and a misunderstanding of what libraries actually
I
do.
agree.
Libraries should be the heartbeat of the campus. They are the space. It is the office. that students have on campus. It's their office space.
It defines the campus.
Exactly. And so we don't need to co-opt space in the library for stupid stuff. What we need to do is we need to use the library and rely on their skill set. And the librarians are very, very good. And they already do talks on this in different classes about what appropriate citations are, how to define what is good information from bad, which sources to use. And I think that's where you go, is you go back to the core fundamentals. Don't sprawl, don't expand, don't build new buildings or anything. Although new buildings might be nice because I'm in
Witherspoon. It would
be nice. So take that part out. We want new buildings, but not for this. Yeah. We go to the library. And in particular, departments based on that can send representatives and they can create guidance.
Absolutely.
If a specific department needs guidance, they can create that guidance at the local level. So when we write the policy at the administrative level or the broader level, we're going to have to take all that into account. Mm-hmm. And the university is going to have to support that. So if we want to make that culture change, I think also certification programs.
Right.
Libraries can lead the way on that. Mm-hmm. And that would not just be true for students or even staff and faculty or administrators. It could be true for the community more broadly, where we see this as an opportunity to say, this is a fundamental characteristic of AI. This is kind of how it works. And then you don't have to have, because we were talking about this earlier, you don't have to have the computer science people do all the heavy lifting there. Mm-mm. So, for instance, I could come in and talk. And we have Jeff Auger with online and his leadership skills and his leadership major, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And you pick different people to come in and do different elements of a broader training system that reaches into the community as well. Mm-hmm. And so, one way to do it would be to build it in every course.
Yeah.
That would spread literacy quickly. But I think also you just build it into the basic sort of foundational class we have, something like Tech 1001. And to be honest, we haven't spoken directly with Dana Tribble yet, but this is something that we might want to pitch to Dana Tribble or English recommended yesterday having a universal research methods class at the 1 or 2000 level that wouldn't be rigorous in the ways that, for instance, our methods classes are at the upper division, but it would be more about literacy skills, et cetera. And librarians could teach those, for instance. We have the resources to do a lot of this. But what we need to do is we need to mesh theory and policy in such a way that it fits within the classroom that builds the culture change that we need. And that's going to require infrastructure in a center as well.
Absolutely.
Pie in the sky. I mean, what do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like you said, pie in the sky kind of situation. It all sounds really fascinating and really good. And, it would do us a lot of good if everything were perfect. But then again, like baby steps at this point, we're just taking like one baby step at a time and trying to just solve one thing at a time. So, it's ethics at this point, and I'm sure other departments are going to have their views and their say in the whole AI thing.
Right.
And that's why we're going to open up the whole AI in series, and we're going to get people in from other departments to hear from them. Because again, like ground level issues are so different than these policies that we put in.
And if we
don't know about what's going on in the ground level, I just feel that people aren't heard enough. So, this is this is your moment to kind of, come here and talk to us about it.
Or send us questions and we can try to answer them. Because remember, these first podcasts are very broad. So we didn't even cover everything about ethics.
Mm-hmm.
But where the rubber hits the road, there'll be questions like, is citing or paraphrasing from AI without citation, is that plagiarism? Mm-hmm. Can AI be listed as a co-author? That creates all sorts of other problems, some of which have to do with intellectual property.
Mm-hmm.
This is the kind of stuff that we have to hammer out, particularly on the ground level with people who are going to deal with that. That's why we want to have additional conversations.
Absolutely. And so that kind of leads us towards the end of episode 3. Sean, can you imagine we are in episode 3? It was just yesterday we were on episode 1.
That's right. That's right. Well, we're doing what we can to try to get the word out. And
absolutely.
Like we said, it changes gears. So next, I think we are going to have Angela from the library come in, and she even went to a conference, and she's got a lot of bona fides in this area.
Great.
She's running the policy for the State Library Association on AI.
That's wonderful.
She'll come in and talk about truth, trust, and hallucinations, and how methods by which are generally why that's a problem and what you can do to kind of help mitigate some of that in the class. So Forrest kind of changes gears for us. I think we were calling it right now. We may change that. I hallucinate, kind of like I robot.
Yeah.
The episode 5, we've talked to Jeff Auger, who used to run like eTech and everything, the online education. He's having to get his head around how this applies to online, because if you're an online student and AI is just right there for you, essentially you can create the conditions under which AI just does your coursework.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So he's doing some things and trying to get his head around that. I think we call it the lathe of teaching, kind of like the lathe of heaven by Ursula.
Yeah.
Once again, these are cheesy, so don't yell at us. And then episode 6, that's where we're going to talk to Will Cooper. I haven't done it yet, but I'll reach out after this and just say, hey, would you be willing to come in and talk about academic misconduct? That's where we can get into the details on the ground. And I think we've loosely entitled episode 6, Childhood's End, of due process, right? So I don't know. I mean, am I covering the basis?
Absolutely, yes. And it'll be a good conversation, and I'm kind of looking forward to it. We are going to open this up, we are going to have further episodes. We had originally planned this to be a 10 episode long thing, but I don't think that's going to stick.
Turns out it's going to be more, I think, and
it will be more.
The goal would be also to maybe share this with the community and share this, because I've had input from people in the community, and I've sat on a couple of community groups. They're trying to get their heads around it as well. So we may share these more broadly.
Absolutely. And we can bring in people from the community who you might think would do well to represent it. Right. And again, those are things just, a little down the line. But yeah, I'm excited where we are right now.
Yeah. No, I think it's going to be awesome.
Absolutely. I hope you guys are excited as well for us. So here's on to the next one.
Send questions.
Yes, absolutely. Send questions.
Email them to Bhaskar.
All right, I'll take it. All right.
All right.
Thank you, y'all. See you.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.